From the Danker studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm your host, Roger McDonough. Coming up today on the show, we're going to be speaking with former state senators Karen Hale and Scott Howell, who are members of the newly formed Utah Debate Commission, which is working to make sure that voters in the state of Utah get to see more debates between candidates for public office in the state.
Sometimes we aren't really seeing who the true candidate is or what the candidate's reaction is to certain issues of the day. And we think a debate in a setting as we're proposing really gives voters the opportunity to see those candidates react, to see how those candidates feel and express their feelings on their feet.
That conversation, your Better Utah legislative recap, and your summary of the day's top local headlines, just ahead on The Rundown, here on KCPW. And thanks again for tuning in to The Rundown this afternoon. Coming up a little bit later on the program, we'll have a conversation with members of the Utah Debate Commission about their efforts to see more debates in the run-up to elections in the state. But first up, we have these headlines. Utah Governor Gary Herbert says he is sending staff to Washington, D.C. this coming Monday to start negotiations with federal officials over Medicaid. Herbert told reporters Tuesday that he himself will travel there in April to continue talks. The Republican governor wants to expand Medicaid by seeking a block grant of federal money rather than enrolling more poor Utah residents on the government health care program. Herbert wants the federal money to help about 110,000 low-income residents to buy health coverage in private plans. Utah legislators who need to agree to fund a Medicaid plan have a number of options to consider that range from doing nothing to full Medicaid expansion. The state's lawmakers have not united behind a single plan. Herbert says legislators may need to discuss the issue in a special session. And sticking with the legislature, on Monday, Governor Gary Herbert signed SB 54 into law, effectively ending the Count My Vote initiative that hoped to reform Utah's caucus system. The bill, sponsored by Republican Senator Kurt Bramble, drew heavy criticism from skeptics, who said it was a clever tactic to nullify the intentions of Count My Vote. The first version of the bill, which the Count My Vote camp opposed, gave Utah political parties two options for reform: a modest revision to the current caucus system and a word-for-word adoption of the Count My Vote initiative, which would have set up a direct primary. After discussions between Senator Bramble and representatives from Count My Vote, an agreement was reached to substitute SB 54 with a dual-system proposal. At a press conference, Bramble explained the compromise.
From the legislative perspective, we have, and I believe Count My Vote has also been engaged in as much public discourse as possible, given the nature of making laws. And so between those two processes, we believe that this has been as transparent and open as is humanly possible.
Early on, Governor Herbert was unsure about whether or not he would sign SB 54 if it came to his desk, saying he didn't want to slight a citizen initiative. But after signing the bill into law on Monday, Herbert felt the proposal was a net positive.
That's why they call it a compromise. I think both sides can feel good about it. It's not perfect. Both sides probably have some reservations. But on balance, I think it's the right thing to do under the current circumstances.
While it has agreed to shut down its petition drive, Count My Vote will continue to exist as an advocacy group. SB 54 will not take effect for the 2014 midterm elections. And it's time now for our Better Utah legislative recap with Marianne Martindale, executive director of the nonprofit Good Government Group Alliance for a Better Utah. Marianne, there was some interesting back and forth today on a proposal to incorporate sex abuse education into the curriculum for Utah schools, sexual abuse education. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this now has reached the Senate. So this is a bill that I think we talked about, at the very first of the session when it was heard in the House committee. So it's made it through the House committee, House floor, Senate committee, and now it's at the Senate floor. And it was debated today during the Senate. And it's called Child Sexual Abuse Prevention. It's HB 286 by Angela Romero. It's an interesting bill. It's an approach to create some type of a curriculum, or that hasn't been determined yet exactly how the curriculum would be created, but in the schools to help children recognize when either the potential for abuse is happening, what they can do, who they can talk to You know, help them acknowledge that this is not right. If you're feeling a certain way about something that's not right, and here's some of the things that you can do. Trying to give them some of the tools to deal with these situations that, you know, I mean, obviously the reason this happens to children is that they're innocent. And the people that do this, the predators, prey on the weak. And so this whole plan is to give them some tools to maybe be able to protect themselves a little bit better and at least to be aware of their setting and some of the things that are happening.
We saw Elizabeth Smart testify at the committee hearing when this bill was presented, right?
Yes, exactly. So both she and her father, so Elizabeth Smart and her father, Ed Smart, both spoke at both committee hearings. Very moving testimony, obviously. You know, her story, everyone's familiar with her story. And she talked about just what this does to a child and how you are changed forever. That no matter what you take from it as an adult, and she's, you know, you have to commend her. I mean, she has a very strong family, but she's also decided she's going to make the most out of what happened, a horrible, horrible situation. And she worked very hard to try to help both advocate for the victims as well as advocate for abuse prevention programs like this. And so she was speaking in favor of this, saying that, you know, if some of the things that they're talking about teaching kids, I didn't know. My parents probably wouldn't have even opted me into this type of a program. We had no idea about this. So it was really insightful.
And that concept of the opt-in is what spurred the debate today. Maybe you could give us the details there.
Right. So it's, as I was saying, it was heard in the Senate today. And as it was being presented, Senator Margaret Dayton made an amendment. So they can motion to make an amend, which changes language. And it would she wanted to change the words opt-out to opt-in. So in other words, as the bill's written, If you're a parent, you get a notification at home in your child's packet or, you know, whatever kind of just materials from school. And it would say, we're going to be having this class. If you would like your child not to participate, please sign this form. If you would like to learn more information about it, please contact us. If you would like to see what the curriculum is, you can come in and see the curriculum. I mean, there's lots of options. The whole point is that we want parents as engaged as possible, obviously. But having it be an opt-out at least gets more kids there than not. Because, you know, also, let's just be realistic. A lot of parents don't wade through the stacks of information that go home. Some parents may be working two jobs. I mean, you don't know what the situation is. And so an opt-out keeps more kids in the program and at least lets those parents that do have a concern still opt their children out.
So Senator Dayton says we shouldn't have an opt-out for this program. We should have an opt-in. And an opt-in is where the parent has to say, for the child to be
right
in the program, they have to say, yes, I want the child.
Yeah, so the form would be written differently. The form would be saying, we're having this program at school tomorrow or the next day or whenever it is. If you would like your child to participate, you must sign below. So in other words, if you don't sign that form, if you don't find that form among the stacks of forms of things that are going home with your kid, if you miss it somehow, or you just, you know, you set it aside because you think maybe I have some other questions or I don't know, you just don't get to it, your child does something else, whether they stay in their class or they, you know, go to the library or whatever, but they're not given this education. And, you know, that's a really dangerous thing. We know statistics are horrifying when it comes to the numbers. 1 in 4 young girls will be a victim of sexual abuse. 1 in 6 young boys.
Wow.
The majority of this takes place under the age of 18. So again, it's a vulnerable age. It's a vulnerable time. They're being preyed upon because they're young and they're weak and they're less able to fight back.
I was going to say this. So some of those who spoke in favor of this piece of legislation today cited their own personal stories, histories.
Yeah, and
of this.
I am sure that I was not the only one that was not expecting that to be part of the testimony. We had 3 senators. So Senator Aaron Osman, Senator Todd Weiler, and Senator Daniel Thatcher all stood individually and spoke about their own personal experiences, either being sexually abused or an attempted sexual abuse. It was very moving. And it was, again, it was very unexpected. And, you know, they spoke from the heart about how important this kind of training is and how that if maybe they had known more, that they might have not been in the situation that they were in.
And did some of them address the opt-out versus opt-in issue?
Yeah. And in fact, all 3 of them said, you know, if it wouldn't have happened to me, I might have been someone who would have thought, oh, yeah, we should opt in. Parental rights, I get that. But this is something that's so serious and it's so important for these kids to know that they spoke against the motion to change it to an opt-in. You know, there's a lot of fear about these kinds of topics, and it's unfortunate because I think that we polarize the discussion. We let the discussion be about sex, mm-hmm. which it's really not about sex. It's about safety, and it's about protecting our children, similar to the sex ed conversations that always happen when they talk about sexual education in school. Those are health education programs. They're really not about sex.
Right.
But yet, you know, it's an easy way to polarize it and to make the discussion difficult, you know, and it gets kind of caught up in some of the rhetoric. And we had Senator Van Tassel that said that, well, he worries that if a parent opts out, that they could be considered a suspect. Why would you want to opt your child out unless you're a suspect? Which, that's never been part of the bill. That's not the point of this bill at all. but there's always going to be those things that were raised. But I really want to go back, you know, the three senators that spoke in favor of this, and then just the importance of the bill. The motion failed.
Okay.
So the opt-out is still in. You have to opt out.
Okay.
And it passed the Senate. It still has one more hurdle, so it only passed the second reading. It has to be read for a third time, but it had a majority vote, so, you know.
So it has to get past this third hurdle, but then it would go on to the governor for his signature.
Yeah, exactly. It'll have to pass the Senate one more vote, and then it will go to the governor for signing. You know, we're hopeful. It's a good bill, and it's an important one. This is a child safety bill.
Well, Marianne, thanks once again for filling us in, and we'll speak to you again tomorrow, your second to last day.
Yeah.
The session is wrapping up. All right, that's Marianne Martindale, Executive Director of the nonprofit Good Government Group Alliance for Better Utah. Thanks once more.
Thank you.
And I'm Roger McDonough. You're listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Stay with us. Beginning this fall, a new commission will bring a slate of political debates to the airwaves in advance of Utah elections. The effort is being spearheaded by the board members of the new Utah Debate Commission, including former Republican Senator Bob Bennett and former Democratic State Senator Scott Howell. Howell, along with Karen Hale, a member of the executive board of the commission, are joining me today in studio so that we can hear a bit more. Thanks to you both for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
We really appreciate it, Roger. It's great to be on your show.
Let's maybe begin with the basics. What is the commission and why is it needed? Yeah, Scott.
Well, thank you. I was going to defer to the executive committee member, but she's in charge and she deferred to me. So, well, the debate commission largely came about due to the efforts of Professor Richard Davis from Brigham Young University, a distinguished political science professor down there, who reached out to his colleagues across the state. And they were very concerned about voter participation. They were also concerned about the quality of candidates, and not to say that they're bad quality, but they wanted to make sure that good candidates were from all parties. And they got together and they started to have some collaborative sessions where they talked about what we could do to increase voter participation. And one of the things that they saw was missing was a rigorous debate where voters could see it prime time. In the past, our debates have largely been on a Sunday morning or after hours, and you couldn't see it. So this group formed the Utah Debate Commission, and then they reached out to all the media, both commercial and public, and there was an instantaneous buy-in. I mean, it was unbelievable when you have fierce competitors come together and say, we want to improve democracy in our state and our country. And with that, Olin Walker was approached to be the co-chair of the UDC, and I had an invitation, and I would serve anywhere with Olin Walker. I think Governor Walker was one of the best governors we've ever had, so we formed this. At that point in time, we brought on executive committee, Senator Hales on that, Dan Lillenquist, numerous other what I'd call public entities who are movers and shakers in policy. And that's really how it all came about in a nutshell.
Well, I know that just in terms of numbers, voter turnout is pretty abysmal, but it hasn't always been that way. In fact, we used to have pretty high voter turnout, but in the past couple of decades, that has changed. Is this a way of trying to address that?
Exactly. You know, 30 years ago, Utah would have been among the top 10 states in the nation for voter turnout. And that's really quite admirable and something that I think citizens of the state really felt proud about. And now we look at it, and we look at voter turnout, and we have just dropped every single year to where we're now 39th in the country. And just a few years before that, we were 48th. So it really is not a good picture for voter participation in our state. And we really hope that by giving voters the opportunity to see candidates debating the real issues of the day, that will increase their participation and their engagement, and they'll feel like they are well-informed and informed enough and care enough to go out and vote.
Let's get some more of the nuts and bolts. Which races are we going to see debates for generally, and where will they be staged? Karen?
Well, we are going to be looking at the four congressional districts.
Okay.
And then we'll also be looking at the attorney general's race. And those dates are set. We have a debate schedule that's set. And we feel like this is really fair because before we even know who all of the candidates will be, we've laid out this schedule. As Scott mentioned, the media full buy-in on this, and we have those dates prepared and ready to go.
Is it the responsibility of the debate commission to decide the format of the debates, as well as, I guess, the questions involved? And is that going to be done in conjunction with the candidates and their staff?
Well, what we want to do is be as bipartisan as we can. And we don't want to have any of the influences of a candidate or the party that would taint the water of what we're trying to achieve here. So we've patterned the Utah Debate Commission after the Presidential Debate Commission, and we've set the dates, and we will provide the moderators as well as we'll take questions from the community at large. And we want all stakeholders to be involved as much as possible, and we see all entities being a part of this. And so for us, we'll collaborate with the candidates, and of course we'll give them time to come up on the stage before. And if you've seen the Mitt Romney documentary, you remember he went out there on stage and he was looking at it, how do I sit and all that.
Right.
The candidates will have a say in that. But to keep this as pure as possible, we don't want any biases. We want voters to be the winners in this. We don't want some particular party or some particular candidate to have a one-up on someone else. We really want voters to have the opportunity to see these candidates at their best and make a decision.
Right. And, you know, there's also the effort to make sure that voters throughout the state will have the opportunity to be involved. Mm-hmm. So the venues have been pre-selected, and the venues include Weber State University, Southern Utah University, Utah Valley University, BYU, and the University of Utah.
Okay.
So we feel like voters throughout the state will be given this opportunity to actually engage and be part of those debates.
You know, I wanted to ask actually about going back to the kind of negotiation that can occur. I mean, you see it at least in the media. There is the idea that candidates are negotiating which questions will show up on that list of questions. Is that something that actually happens?
Well, and I can give you some firsthand experience on that. I had the great privilege of debating Senator Orrin Hatch, and this was hosted by the PBS channels here in conjunction with KUED and KBYU, and we had no input on that. We had no pre-screening of questions. When we did negotiations, it was really about the time, the format, rebuttal time, and things like that. And those were pretty much set by both those PBS stations. So we really, again, are looking for a purity in this where it doesn't give an advantage to one over the other. Because as Senator Hale mentioned, at the end of the day, it's to get the motivation back to voters to say, you know what, I thought I was this party and I've heard this candidate say that. I think I can vote for that candidate. And that's really what it is.
Speaking of parties, how are the parties reacting to this? Are the state Democratic and Republican parties both on board? You know, what's going on there?
Well, I think like anything in a transformation of a culture, that it takes some getting used to, and especially where one party has been so dominant. But we've had ongoing conversation with James Evans and Jim DeBacchus. And our board is made up of a bipartisan. I mentioned Dan Lillenquist, Senator Bennett, Olene Walker. Thomas Wright is now a member of the board.
Former chair of the Republican Party.
Republican Party. So I think that they're all in agreement that the format is right. And at the end of the day, they have the same objective as we do, as having voter turnout.
I've read in a couple of news reports that James Evans, for example, chair of the Republican Party currently, wants to see a little bit more before signing on to this.
Sure.
I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned a little bit how this looks from the perspective of the candidate. In your run against Senator Hatch in 2012, you had just one debate. Do incumbents tend to shy away from debates because they maybe have more to lose?
Well, Roger, that's a great question. And if I was an incumbent, I'd probably do the same thing. Hmm. Although that's not true, because I really do love debating. And, and I attended seven debates of all our candidates from the Constitutional Party, the Green Party, and we held seven across the state, and they were very beneficial. I think KCPW actually hosted one of those.
I believe so.
And we really, I found it beneficial. It was great. And it was good and interesting. But yes, they do hide behind incumbency. But that's the very thing that's wrong with our system. You know, going back to the days of Lincoln and the debating, this is an American heritage. This is something that Newt Gingrich, I think, had right when he talked about how passionate, if he was the candidate, he wanted to debate Obama 17 times. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that that causes one to stand on their two feet. It shows them under the most duress of power. But I always equate it to, don't you want to elect someone who, when they go push that nuclear button, they're really tested, and you see their emotional reaction, you see their emotional IQ versus their intellectual IQ, and they've got to come together.
You know, when you think about the messages we as voters are receiving during a political season, those messages have been tailored and crafted by a specific campaign. And so it's very focused, the message that is going out to voters. And sometimes we aren't really seeing who the true candidate is or what the candidate's reaction is to certain issues of the day. And we think a debate in a setting as we're proposing really gives voters the opportunity to see those candidates react, to see how those candidates feel and express their feelings on their feet.
It's a workaround that whole PR machine that is the process of politics these days.
Yeah.
Maybe we can talk about that for just a little bit longer, because there is the concept that advertising is what wins elections, especially in places where you don't see a lot of debates like Utah. Could this possibly lead to less spending in advertising?
Well, you nailed it when you said the 30-second ads as well as press releases. They sometimes dominate who people vote for. Mm-hmm. And I think that the money could dry up quickly, or it could actually expand when a candidate such as Governor Perry tries to explain why he didn't know that third branch of government he wanted to get rid of so bad. And I think that could explain a lot of that. But overall, the UDC will create that whole climate of candidate debating that really benefits no individual candidate, particular party, but does benefit the voters. And they want to seek information, and they want it beyond the press release in that 30 seconds. And I think that that's the essence of this. And my gosh, if we get this and we have voter participation increase, it'll be one of the best things to ever happen to the state of Utah. And Senator Hale maybe can talk a little bit about how we're involving schools to sit with their parents and the education community from kindergarten all the way to college.
Yeah, UEN will be participating with us on these debates and involving school classes throughout the state. And as well, you know, when you talk about higher ed, it's great to see that we have all of the higher ed campuses participating with us as well. Just being able to really look at this as something, you know, I look at higher ed's perspective and really thinking to what an educated person is and what is the essence of education, and as voters are using that education to go forward and really help our society progress. There, I think there's goodwill among higher ed, public ed, and the commission has really made an effort to reach out to different groups.
And ATCs, the Applied Technology Centers,
right.
And as Senator Hale read, all those places where we're holding the debates, we want rural Utah to be a part of this. We want that turkey farmer down in Moroni. We want that cattle producer down in Moab. We want them to be there. And that's why we've chosen the venues that we have all across the state.
Well, and I think it's worth mentioning that this is an opportunity to witness the living political process in person for students and for the public in general. It's something that we don't necessarily get a chance to see that often. Maybe you could tell us the dates of the debates.
Sure, I'd love to. So our first debate is scheduled for Tuesday, September 23rd, and that will be the first congressional district debate, and that will be held at Weber State. And then we have Thursday, September 25th for the second congressional district at SUU, Tuesday, October 7th, the third congressional district at Utah Valley, Thursday, October 9th, the Attorney General debate, that will be held at BYU, and Tuesday, October 14th will be the 4th Congressional District at the U of U.
Great. And we have some of the candidates already announced, correct?
You know, we actually had several of those candidates attend our
press conference.
Okay. And it's great to see their excitement to participate.
Great. Sean Reyes cornered me in the hall the other day up at the Capitol Hill, and he said, "Scott, I'm ready to debate. Let's go right now. I'm ready." And I think that shows the enthusiasm of...
Yeah, we have seen a lot of enthusiasm from the candidates.
Great. Well, I don't know if I'm missing anything, but I want to thank you both for taking the time to come in and help our listeners understand better what the Utah Debate Commission is and the process.
Thank you.
Roger, thank you very much. And we hope KCPW will be a part of our initiative, because you play an important role in our community. And the bottom line on the UDC is that Utah is once more pioneering a effort to change voter participation and to ensure that we have democracy alive and well.
That's Scott Howell, one of the co-chairs of the newly formed Utah Debate Commission. And we were also joined by Karen Hale, a member of the executive board of that commission. Thanks to you both once again for coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And again, we've been speaking with former state senators Scott Howell and Karen Hale about the newly formed Utah Debate Commission. You can find more information about the commission, including the dates, times, and locations of this fall's debates, at utahdebatecommission.org. And you can find this conversation and all of our past programs at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And thanks once more for tuning into The Rundown here on KCPW. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis, Ryan Cunningham, and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tune in each weekday at 5 for an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.